not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Martin, and what a show today. This is the first of its kind. We are not only live from Studio S in mid-Michigan, East Lansing, WKAR's home studios, also New Orleans, Louisiana, where I am right now. I had to go back home for family reasons while Al is out in Jamaica soaking up the sun, which there is no shortage of, as I hear in East Lansing, as it is, but also not its first. But at the same time, one rare show where there's just too much to get to. This weekend was so full of sports news, starting with MSU's first ever game under the lights in Spartan Stadium. That was a really special occasion. And of course, you saw Kirk Gibson. He had his jersey inducted into the Spartan Ring of Fame. MSU falling 38-18 in that game. We'll have a full breakdown about that. If it's a big deal for the Spartans, who played well, who played did it, who didn't, as well as a couple of changes that I'd actually like to see on the offensive front for MSU. The Detroit Lions, you thought MSU was a bit of a heartbreaker. You didn't see anything last weekend. Detroit Lions, of course, marching all the way down to the one, only to lose with 0 seconds left after a clock runoff. Golden Tate's touchdown ruled to actually be stopped short right at the one-yard line with 10 seconds remaining when his knee touched the ground. Then the referees had to run 10 seconds off because of the review. And the Detroit Lions, just as unfortunate as they come, plus all of the protest in the NFL this weekend, it was really, again, the first of its kind that we've seen the magnitude of athletes and activism within the NFL. I'll give you my opinion on that. It's nothing new, but it is refurbished because of all that went down over this weekend, plus University of Michigan. They might have a new quarterback over there. We'll talk about that and so much more. Feel free to call in to today's show. The phone lines are still working despite all the innovation. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We will be taking your calls all day long about those topics. But hey, first, you know how we started off each and every day, just like normal. It's your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Despite all the happenings on the national scene, you know we can't ignore our local high school sports scene. That's our favorite. Week 5 is in the books, and here are some of the scores from around the area. Grand Ledge took down Okemos 28-20. Jackson, meanwhile, top Sexton. That game surprised me, 35-28. East Lansing took it to Lansing Eastern, 44-12. Holt topped Everett, 45-14. Hazlitt beat Charlotte 38-13. DeWitt, easy win against Waverly, 59-12. St. John's beating Mason 40-13. Fowlerville just edging out Eaton Rapids in overtime 21-20. Portland 35, Lansing Catholic 6. A shocking defeat by that margin for Lansing Catholic. Williamston, 35. Ionia, 34. Another overtime affair there. Pawama Westphalia beat Fulton 48-7. Saranac beat Bath 33-18. Olivet over Maple Valley 35-12. Lakewood over Stockbridge 55-6. A blowout there. Ithaca 63. Saginaw Valley Lutheran a donut. We'll have more high school coverage as the week goes along. Saturday night saw Michigan State play under the lights at Sparn Stadium for the first time, but Notre Dame quickly extinguished the rivalry's flame in a 38-18 slugging. Notre Dame quarterback Brandon Wimbush threw for 173 yards and rushed for 52 as the Fighting Irish drove the Spartans up and down the field, scoring 28 points in the first half alone. Compounding the Spartans' misery, quarterback Brian Lewerke threw another review. Tate's knee was down when the ball was just inches shy of the goal line. I'm not sure if even inches, maybe an inch. Worse for the Lions, the review caused a 10-second runoff to occur, and the game ended there. After the game, Coach Jim Caldwell admitted that the officiating decision was correct and defended his play calling. The Lions forced three interceptions out of defending NFL MVP Matt Ryan in the game. Matthew Stafford was 25 of 45 with a touchdown and 264 yards. The game ended 26-30, Falcons. In the most Detroit Lions way possible, Coach Jim Caldwell received a multi-year contract extension. Now, news broke Saturday of that development, but it was reported that the new deal was actually struck months ago. Jim Caldwell has made the playoffs in two of his first three seasons in Detroit. 51 games gone. He's won 29 with the Honolulu Blue in that time span. The Lions also locked down quarterback Matthew Stafford to the most lucrative deal in NFL history just before the year started. And yet just last week, Caldwell was asked about the security of his contract and did not divulge the news of a new contract to the media, only the Detroit Lions. And after 4 years in charge, Brad Ausmus will relinquish his duties as Detroit Tigers manager after this season. The Tigers announced on Friday that they would not tender a new contract offer to the former catcher. "We didn't win," Alavia said when announcing the move in the Detroit Tigers dugout before Friday night's game. "The organization, the club, got to a point where we needed change on the field. We needed to change the roster, and we started trading players. So the conclusion is, okay, you know what? Let's just take a whole brand new road and opening up to new things." Those the words, again, of Alavia, Tigers GM. Detroit is the first team in the MLB to officially announce a coaching change. Ausmus has a losing record, 312 wins to 328 losses as manager of the Tigers, who were swept by the Twins in a four-game series that ended on Sunday. The losing streak currently stands at 7. Quote, "Al and I have become very good friends over the 4 years I was here, so it was a little emotional when he told me he wasn't going to bring me back," Ausmus said. "Quite frankly, I told him I understand. And I told him if he had walked in and offered me a new contract, I probably wouldn't have come back because I think this team, this organization, is starting over. They need a new voice." Detroit has already shed salary and top players this season, dealing out Justin Upton, JD Martinez, and Justin Verlander, amongst others. Their 62-94 mark is tied for the second worst in baseball. And look alive, backup, Michigan's football paced itself, but quarterback John O'Korn found 21 consecutive points in the second half as the Wolverines rallied past the Purdue Boilermakers in West Lafayette, Indiana. O'Korn replaced regular starter Wilton Spate, who was 2-of-4 when he suffered a couple of hits in the backfield that sent him to the locker room in the first quarter. O'Korn deputized well, going 18-of-26 on attempts while airing out 270 yards with the touchdown. Coach Jim Harbaugh declined to say what the game meant for the quarterback position. The Wolverines unsurprisingly have protected the details around Spate's injury as well. Purdue entered the second half up 10-7, but the Maize and Blue defense had the bit between their teeth the second half, allowing just 10 yards in the whole second stanza of that game. Running back Chris Evans for the Big Blue darted for 2 touchdowns and 97 yards. Michigan remained number 8 in the rankings despite an Oklahoma State upset. And while Michigan Jim Harbaugh chose to dodge questions about his quarterbacking battle, the Michigan head coach wasn't so reticent when it came to national politics. After President Donald Trump expletively referred to anthem protesters and called on NFL owners to fire players who knelt during the national anthem, Harbaugh had a few choice words to say. Quote, "No, I don't agree with the president. That's ridiculous. Check the Constitution." More on that right now. Saying in a speech in Alabama that he wished those players who kneeled would be released, President Donald Trump censured athletes across sports and teams over the weekend. He encouraged fans who are offended by anthem protests to walk out of stadiums and called on owners to fire players. After Golden State Warriors point guard Stephen Curry said that he would likely not go to the White House if invited, Trump tweeted out that he would welcome the defending NBA champions otherwise, but because of Curry's tweet, the offer was rescinded. Several players, owners, and coaches reacted strongly to Trump on social media. LeBron James, the greatest in the game right now, called Trump a bum and said that, quote, "Going to the White House was an honor before you showed up." On Sunday, most NFL players ever knelt or sat for national anthems. Other teams in unison locked arms. The Pittsburgh Steelers even remained entirely in the locker room for the anthem, with the exception of Alejandro Villanueva, a thrice-deployed Army veteran. Lions owner Martha Ford released a statement decrying Trump's comments. She also locked arms with players before the game in a sign of solidarity. 9 Lions took a knee. Former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick is, of course, behind this all. He started the pregame protest of racial oppression and police brutality in the United States last season by kneeling during the national anthem before a preseason game. The kneeling during the national anthem in week 1 and throughout the season. Trump has not let his foot off the gas, however, tweeting this morning, "More messages about boycotting the NFL. We'll have plenty of that coming up, rest assured." Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. We're going to move on the show for today, as it is a busy one, but we want your comments and opinions too. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Busy show coming up. Call in with whatever you want to talk about: MSU, Detroit Lions, NFL players kneeling, Michigan football, or the Detroit Tigers letting go of Brad Ausmus. We'll have all of that and more coming right up.
State. Spartans looked like they had a touchdown.
After review, the ruling on the field stands. Touchback. First down. Notre Dame.
Wow.
McIntosh running behind. Look at McIntosh go all the way in. Touchdown Notre Dame. Fast. He's got fast. Irish go 62 yards in 8 plays. And they extend now to a 34-10 lead.
Statistically, I guess, statistics can lie to you. You still have the -3 turnovers, 2 made penalties, didn't control the quarterback from the scramble situation, didn't contain the quarterback well enough, 2 many loose plays that were created, that he created, you have to give him credit. Too much yards per rush. I thought Adams ran the ball pretty effectively, even though he didn't have a lot of yards, 50 yards, 57 yards. I thought he ran the ball too effectively. Got to get off the field on third down. Offensively, ball security, got to run the ball more efficiently. And again, penalties, critical penalties. So I know some things are in question, I'm sure, but you got to play what's dealt to him. It's dealt just so. The thing that we have to do is get ready for Iowa. You know, this was an out-of-conference game, so our focus is on the Big Ten Conference. It would have been anyway, so we're going to live and learn a little bit, young players sometimes. And we're going to make some mistakes, but we've got to be able to overcome those mistakes. But the first pick 6, tough. Things happen on the football field. So.
Welcome back. My point is, LJ Scott, that sort of fumble on the goal line, you cannot have that happen right now when it comes to Spartan football. Did it lose the team the game? Probably not. Probably not. Because at the end of the day, this was a 38-18 game. Brian Lewerke threw a pick 6. He fumbled, leading to a Notre Dame score. All sorts of things had to go right for Notre Dame to win this one. But at the same time, that's because they induced all of that. MSU created problems for themselves. And that's what I'm saying, is when it's on the goal line, 21-14 game, if LJ scores there, this is a totally different ball game. Students aren't leaving early. The fans aren't out of it. The players don't lose all their momentum. And after the game, Chris Fry even went after LJ a little bit in his post-game press conference. It wasn't the most conciliatory of remarks. But in any case, that punch at the ball, it was not as if it was against Bowling Green. It was not a good enough hit to jog that ball loose. LJ Scott should have kept that one. And if I were Coach Mark D'Antonio, I would highly consider playing LJ next week, but as a backup, and starting Gerald Holmes, the senior running back, instead. That ended the game right there. On to Brian Lewerke really quickly. He had a fumble, which was very costly, and a pick 6 that made the situation so dire, 14-0 game in the first place. and it was a great read by the Notre Dame corner. But at the same time, that's a play that you've got primary option in Darryl Stewart, who you're trying to get that ball out to. It was just so basic when it comes to making that throw. When a guy's doing an out route, especially with a pick play, you need to be right on it. Before he turns his head and makes his cut, or right when he does, that football needs to be released. It wasn't. Brian Lewerke, he let him take two steps towards the sideline before he even released that ball. And again, Notre Dame all over it. It was too easy for them. As I was saying earlier, Brandon Wimbush looked great despite his odd sidearm stance. He really looked good. The play to Durham Smythe over the middle for a 21-yard gain on 3rd and 10. The diving catch, you might remember, that was a big play in that game, as was Chris Fry also getting burnt to make it 21-7. He was assigned to Dexter Williams, who scored Notre Dame's third touchdown of the game. But Dexter Williams had a release route, meaning that he was assigned first to block, but then released once he saw more or less an opening, or he might have just delayed that route. Either way, it was a brilliant play call by Brian Kelly. As I said, he outcoached Mark D'Antonio even. But Chris Fry also has to know, as a captain of this team, as a captain of this defense, that you need to sniff that out. And once you're caught in between, it's okay to make a mistake, but then you've got to live with that mistake and make the best out of it. He was caught in no man's land because after that, he chose to pursue Williams, who was always going to be wide open in the end zone for a touchdown. Instead, he probably should have just rushed Wimbush flat out. But in any case, it was not a great game for MSU, 38-18. It was a great game for Notre Dame, who played without doubt their best ball of their season. And Brian Lewerke, they gave him some trouble early on. And as I said, the first ever game under the lights at Spartan Stadium, under the permanent lights, that is. And Notre Dame, credit to them, they look like a pretty good team this year. And Brian Kelly, with that win, just might have saved his job. Now, MSU, a couple bright spots. I was happy with Brian Lewerke, and I'll be interested to see what any callers, 517-355-9527, have to say about that, because he had two crucial mistakes. He had the fumble where he tried to almost perform a swim move on the oncoming tackler, but did not work out, obviously. Notre Dame recovered that fumble, and then the pick six, which I just described. He didn't have a great start to the game, but he finished 31 of 51, 340 yards. And at the end of the day, he really impressed me. Converted a two-point conversion at the end. He bounced back from bad plays well. And as a sophomore, your job is to make good plays. But as a coach, you understand that that sophomore quarterback is going to make some bad plays too. It's when it comes to his junior and senior year that you got to tear those out by the roots. But Brian Lewerke, he has shown nothing but promise for me when it came to that QB scramble, 52 yards of a QB sneak, rushed for 61 in the game. That was one of the most intuitive plays, just like the shovel pass in week one that had Michigan State fans salivating for what was to come. A 52-yarder QB sneak that did not look designed. He just saw the gap in the defense and took off. That was phenomenal. He and Tristan Jackson got it going. Hunter Risen, best game of his career so far. And Darryl Stewart, as always, helping out his quarterback. So for Brian Lewerke, that was the bright spot. However, LJ Scott, you've got a couple of things to address on that note. Call in 517-355-9527. We are going to hit our first break. And coming out of that, it's a busy weekend, not just for MSU sports, of course. The NFL had a revolutionary day in many ways, and we will discuss about the feud between Donald Trump and athletes everywhere right now. And coming out of that break, we'll also take your calls. Mike from Saginaw, I know you're on. We'll get to you on WKAR AM 870.
We first need to clarify what an invasive species is, and the definition has two parts. Part one is that an invasive species is a plant, animal, or other organism that humans have taken to a place they wouldn't normally live. These are called non-native, alien, or introduced species. But, and this is part two, for an introduced species to be invasive, it also has to cause a significant level of damage in its new environment, like killing off native species or spreading disease. Rats are a classic example, but there are many more. Water hyacinth, originally from South America, is now smothering the life out of lakes and waterways in over 50 countries. There's also Asian carp, which can eat 20% of its own body weight in plankton every day and is outcompeting native fish in the Mississippi. And then there are colonies of Argentine ants marching their way at this very moment across six continents, leaving extinctions in their wake. Globally, it's estimated that invasive...
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Call in 517-355-9527. My name's Isaac Constance, here filling in for Al Martin, who's out in Jamaica. And I'm actually out in New Orleans, where, we're having a couple of events down here. And I need to go down for family reasons, actually. But it's pretty funny doing the first ever remote show, as I know it, in Current Sports history when it comes to a live broadcast just using this new technology. Sorry for any hiccups earlier in case you couldn't hear us, but we got that all sorted out and should be all set for a great final 22 minutes of the show. I see that we have Ray from Indiana on line one. Ray, you still there?
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Hey, good. How about you, Ray?
Well, I tell you, where's Al at today?
Al's out in Jamaica, in fact, so he's soaking up the sun.
Well, he's on vacation?
Yeah, took a nice vacation. You know, he deserves it. First ever MSU football game that he's missed.
Michigan State gets killed in football, and they let him go on vacation, huh?
Yeah, apparently that's the trend. I'll have to let him know. 0-1 in career.
Hey, I'm telling you, you guys look terrible. I went to bed at halftime. I knew you were going to get killed. You did, 38-18. I see Michigan, the bullies. They pulled one out in the second half, and they got a bye this week. Do they have a – you guys got a bye before you play them?
No, Michigan State plays Iowa next week. That's a home game.
At home or on the road?
Yeah, home game right there.
My goodness, you better start playing a lot better football or you're going to get killed when you go up to the Big House.
Well, Michigan certainly looked better. They've got a few questions themselves, though, with John O'Korn.
How bad an injury is that quarterback hurt?
A replacement for Wilton Spate.
How bad is that quarterback hurt?
Walton Spate, they have not released the details of his injury yet. It looked like a neck or head injury to me, which is always worrisome. It was a little bit of a late hit. But John O'Korn, his backup, who was competing with him for the starting job before the season even took place, he looked very good, and I think he might be the better quarterback of the two.
Well, I couldn't believe Purdue. They weren't covering the flats at all. They kept throwing the ball in the flat on both sides for him. They made it so easy for that guy.
Well, I'll tell you what. Michigan had a great offensive half when it came to the second half, but they only scored 7 in the first half, right? Purdue was up 10-7 at halftime, and Purdue really did not give their defense any sort of relief. I think they just got worn down by the
Yeah,
time
they
that
did.
Game
they got
wore
out. I'm going to tell you something else. New England is the luckiest 2-1 team I ever seen. They had three fumbles that the ball bounced back into their hands after Brady fumbled it. They had an interception dropped. And that's the only reason they're 2-1 right now. These other teams, when they get a chance against Brady, they don't come through and get the turnovers.
That was a close game against the Texans. I really like Deshaun Watson as quarterback for Houston.
Right.
But no, New England, they find a way to win. You're right, maybe a little bit of luck, but I don't think this game matters anyway. You know, whether they're 1-2
Well, they had a fumble.
They
ran all the way back, Texas did. But they had three fumbles. that bounced right back into their hands when Brady fumbled the ball, and then they had an interception that was dropped before he threw that touchdown pass. Come on, when you get a chance for a turnover, you got to make the play.
Yeah, that's just how football goes sometimes, unfortunately. But at the same time,
right?
You know, when you got to give them credit. Houston,
they're yeah, winning, but I hope exactly. they keep giving
they
up that
up
kind
game,
of defense all year. Their luck's going to run out before long.
Yeah, absolutely, right. Well, yeah,
I'll tell you though, State better get their act together in a hurry before they go up to the Big House.
Yeah. You're sure right about that. They could use
But
it.
You can't just pass the ball against them. You got to run the ball. I don't care how good their defense is. You got to show some kind of running game, or they'll just be all over the pass all day.
And we'll see who that running back is. In fact, right? That's still
well. It should be Scott, shouldn't it?
For next game. Yeah, it should be. But at the same time, three fumbles in three games.
He had three fumbles. I didn't know he did that.
Yeah, they might.
Oh, you can't tolerate that. You mean fumble three times this year?
Yeah, he's fumbled it three times, including
well,
twice.
Well, I didn't know that. I haven't been watching him real close, so you can't put a running back in there that fumbles the ball either. I agree with that.
Definitely.
Take care, buddy.
Thanks for the call, Red.
Yep.
Yeah, moving forward, actually, speaking on the note of the NFL, it was actually a pretty interesting weekend for once. And, you know, the NFL has been trending downwards for so long, and suddenly, the most drama, I feel like the most viewers, probably turned in quite a few weeks. Now, the thing is, Donald Trump, the president of the United States, over the weekend, held a rally in Alabama where he described players who kneeled as something that I actually cannot repeat on the radio. And he went on to encourage owners to fire players who protested. Particularly by kneeling or sitting during the national anthem, saying that it was disrespectful to troops and the flag of the United States. He also rescinded an invitation that was apparently never sent out. It gets really confusing. But anyway, to Golden State Warriors point guard Stephen Curry. Stephen Curry had said that he would not accept a trip to the White House if it was offered. And Donald Trump said in response through a tweet that, well, the invitation is not coming anyway. So a really odd turn of events there. LeBron James then went on to call the president a bum, and things just escalate. Donald Trump has actually continued to tweet throughout the morning. And this is obviously an issue that we've covered closely here on Current Sports. But he retweeted a post that said, "Boycott the NFL. We can boycott you." He tweeted out a hashtag, Stand for Our Anthem, tweeted out a picture of NFL player Pat Tillman, who is an Army veteran, actually killed in action in 2004. He said that the issue of kneeling has nothing to do with race. It is about respect for our country, flag, and national anthem. NFL must respect this. Now, this is obviously a very divisive issue. If you went out to dinner yesterday, as I did, you heard every single table around you talking about some debates going on. And the thing about this is, it's not going away. Some people said, oh, this is just a one-off almost for the NFL. These protests have been mounting for well over a year now. And it's worth noting where they came from, which I'm sure you all know by now, but Colin Kaepernick started this when he kneeled and sat for the national anthem during preseason games last year. He continued it on throughout the regular season. Colin Kaepernick is now a free agent without a job in the NFL. Some people feel as if that is unjust. You've heard both Al and I say that we're not sure if he's got the level of play to be a top 32 quarterback, and that honestly, as sad as it is, when it comes to a backup, you want vanilla. You want plain and simple. You don't want somebody who's taking cameras away from the starter or the leader of the team. Now, first of all, I want to just say I take serious issue with the implication that the White House or the President of the United States would vie for anybody to be fired from a private company over their personal beliefs and freedom of speech. I find that truly horrifying, shocking, and un-American. I think that there's no excuse for that whatsoever. You should find that too. No president should attack private citizens the way that Donald Trump did, especially referring to them in an expletive manner. You should have a problem with that. That is too far. Those comments are below the office. They are petty, and they are not constructive whatsoever to building a unified country. Now, that's not the debate, though. The thing is, a lot of people are getting lost in should players stand, should they kneel, whatever it is. They're not focusing on the actual issue. And when it comes to this, we are a sports talk radio show. I'm not here to lecture you all on politics. I'm the last person to, and I like to play my cards close to my chest when it comes to matters that can divide people. But you saw a lot of NFL teams answer the call in different ways yesterday. Many owners released statements that were decrying Donald Trump's comments or tweets, including Martha Ford, who also stood with her players and locked arms with them. You saw Dan Snyder, even, of the Washington Redskins, ironically, standing with his players. He actually donated $1 million to the Donald Trump campaign when it was going on, or at least the inauguration, I believe. So that in itself raises a few questions. Now, when Colin Kaepernick first kneeled, it was to protest police brutality and inequality under the United States system. I said at the time that I respect the intention, I respect his view, and I agree with it. I think it's an effective means to protesting. I understand why some people who did serve in the armed forces could feel disrespected by it. I do. When it comes to kneeling, especially sitting, I think kneeling is better than sitting, but I can understand how some people would feel disrespected. But the thing is, protests are not supposed to be convenient or easy to swallow if you disagree with the message. They're supposed to jar your memory, to cause you to think, to bring back maybe shades of Muhammad Ali or protests in the past, Bill Russell's, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's. Protests are supposed to be protest. They're supposed to be something that, again, calls problems in society into question. Now, coming back to the central part of this protest, teams in an unprecedented magnitude all rallied together and protested the national anthem, in many ways protested Donald Trump himself. Now, there were some that I think were effective and good, and some which I really was not a fan of. First of all, I loved the locking of arms or the kneels with hands of solidarity on their shoulders. I thought that was a beautiful statement across the league. I thought that everybody who participated in unison, in solidarity, showed a lot of strength, a lot of bravery, and a good head on where this country needs to go. Now, other teams, such as the Pittsburgh Steelers, chose to stay in the locker room. In fact, the Steelers were the only ones to, but one player, Alejandro Villanueva, went out onto the field, and on the field, he actually stood for the national anthem. Villanueva is a three-time Army veteran. He was deployed three times to war. I have no problem with him standing for the national anthem, or most players, for that matter. That is, again, your right, as it is the right of other players to kneel or sit. However, on my New Orleans Saints, about eight or nine players were sitting. All were black. Two white players about stood next to them with their hands on their teammates' shoulders, and everybody else was standing for the national anthem, standing in different parts of the field, or on different parts of the field, standing on different parts of the sideline. That doesn't work for me. You talk about a unified front, that's the opposite. The thing is, as a team, sports are all about unification. It's about chemistry. It's a microcosm for society and how it should act. Now, the Saints, when they do something like that, how does that not create a fracture in the offense, in the defense, in the locker room itself? It does. There's no two ways about it, because these issues cut so much deeper than sports. These are not athletes. These are people who want to be involved in what they view as advancing a better society. So locking arms, I'm all for. Kneeling together, I'm all for. But some sort of mixture of it all, it doesn't work. I don't blame any individual in that case, but teams, coaches, leaderships, they need to come together and find a better way to do it. However, the worst thing I saw, I have to get this off my chest, is LeSean McCoy. And he didn't stand for the national anthem. He didn't sit for it. He didn't kneel for it. I respect all of those. And those are very powerful movements. He stretched during it. And a lot of people talk about that favorably, such as, oh, he's trolling Donald Trump. He's trolling the national anthem. He's not. There is no progress when you act that way whatsoever. When you are LeSean McCoy and you are somebody who's venerated in society, looked up to by kids, you send out the message, in my opinion, you can disagree, 517-355-9527, but in my opinion, he said, you know what? I'm going to play a joke on people. I'm going to get in people's heads. I'm going to annoy them. It does not set up a platform for educated and intelligent, debate on this subject. When you stretch on a field, you totally disavow your promise to work harder, as he has promised in the past. People do not take this seriously. And the other side, if they see you kneeling, they might wonder why. And this is the question that hasn't been asked, why? If they see you sitting, they might wonder why. They see you stretching during the national anthem when everybody else is either standing, sitting, doing something very serious. They view you as a kid who does not know anything, who will not affect any sort of change, who's not worth having a conversation with. LeSean McCoy, next time, I recommend kneeling, I recommend sitting. I'm all in favor of that. But we need to find a way to actually unify this front so that an actual conversation occurs instead of people just shouting back vitriol to each other from the sideline to the stands. That does not work. And when you have a sort of flippant protest like that, that is so ineffective. It was meant to be provocative, but guess what? The last thing people need nowadays is provocation. We need discussion. The other thing I want to touch on, a lot of people are saying boycott the NFL. I'm watching sports. I'm watching football. I've waited so long for football to return to America. I'm watching it. And part of the reason I'm watching it, it's not because I don't agree with the protest. I'm not saying that if you disagree with a protest, that means that you should watch or whatever. All I'm saying is that the side of Colin Kaepernick right now is saying boycott the NFL because Colin Kaepernick has remained unsigned. And that's a sign of racism within the league, within the NFL itself. Okay, fair enough. Here's the problem, though. The side of Donald Trump equally fairly is saying boycott the NFL. It is unpatriotic what these people are doing. And unless the league fixes it, I won't watch sports anymore. You see what I'm saying? You've got two extremes going at it, both with the same ends to the means. So if you boycott and you're on the side of Colin Kaepernick, guess why Donald Trump thinks you're boycotting? Because you hate Colin Kaepernick and you hate the protests he started. Now, the vice versa of that situation holds true as well. But the thing is, it's also a very passive way to say, I'm not watching sports, to actually affect change. The thing is, the NFL, does it have an impact on people's lives? Sure. But that impact is not coming from you. That is coming from the league, the players, the owners. That is coming from the sport itself. But if you want to protest something, get out there. Go protest. Do it peacefully, of course. But get out there, make your voice heard. Because right now, we are in a society where discussion is not occurring. It's a bunch of people subtweeting at each other, and that will never work. Anyway, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. The other big news over this weekend, and there's only 3 minutes left on the show, but Brad Ausmus getting cut from the Detroit Tigers after this season. They announced that he will not be back as manager, not renewing his contract after 4 years with the team. I mean, people, this is simple enough. It's straightforward. Brad Ausmus did not get the job done. Did I think that expectations were inflated by none other than Tigers fans themselves? Absolutely. I thought they overjudged the talent of this team throughout the years. I thought Brad Ausmus had his job cut out for him, and I thought that it was a team where, at the end of the day, they didn't have all the ingredients in the first place. You talk about relievers nowadays. That was the problem 4 years ago when he took over, too. And it was an aging team back then that still made the playoffs. After that, it's just gone downhill. Anyway, Brad Ausmus, he'll officially be out after this year. Now, a lot of people, they'll whine, they'll complain. There's a lot of hyperbole nowadays for the reasons that I just stated. And all you can do is forget about him. This was a middle-of-the-road manager who might eventually get a job with another team. He did not ruin this team, though. He was not the Grim Reaper when it came to Detroit Tigers championship hopes. That was a variety of different ingredients that went into this team's failure to ultimately win and achieve their final goal. But it was not all on the shoulders of Brad Ausmus. I think this is the right choice because they needed a new direction. Boy, did they. They need to rebuild at this point to focus on prospects. And although Brad Ausmus had some mild success with that, he did not rejuvenate the farm system. However, the Tigers finally letting him go, yes, that is the right move. That wraps it up for this edition of Current Sports with Al Martin, with me, Isaac Constance, filling in for Al on this September 25th. Thank you for tuning in. We'll have plenty of more coverage throughout the week. Tomorrow is a pre-record show, but make sure you keep locked to Current Sports throughout the week for all your latest news coverage. You've been listening to WKR AM 870 and FM 94.5.